Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store and online. And now, the more you buy, the more you save on beds, bases, and more. Plus, get free premium delivery on any bed with base. Limited time. For J.D. Power 2025 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Check it out at a Sleep Number store today.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Streamed and Screened, an entertainment podcast about movies and TV from Lee Enterprises. I'm Terry Lipschitz, managing editor of the National Newsroom at Lee and co-host of the program with Bruce Miller, longtime entertainment reporter, and we are in award season right now, a lot going on, but it's not the best of times for network television when it comes to awards.
They're throwing them on like two cans and a string. It's so hard to find some of these ones, especially if you're looking. And they're on straight networks. YouTube is doing some. YouTube will be doing the Oscars at some point, so that tells you about their fortunes. It's difficult. You have to just kind of start searching before they start doing the red carpet, and you should be able to find it. But I think this the Golden Globes are on CBS because they own them. And that brings up the whole question of, well, who's voting? Mm-hmm. They're like the People's Choice Awards, where whenever you watch the People's Choice Awards, whatever network they're on, their people are going to win. Even though you go, wait a minute, I don't even watch that show. How could that be the best or the most popular show? Well, it's because they own the prize.
Yep.
So that's the Golden Globes. And we really haven't figured out who they are yet. They say they've got voters, and it's more voters than what the foreign press used to have with the Golden Globes. But it will be interesting to figure out who wins. I think they're a little more on the nose with who gets nominated. But you wait, there'll be something like Kathy Bates will win, and you go, Kathy Bates, she's winning for this? I'm not so sure. So.
Right.
Yeah, that's how that goes. But it's a difficult time. And they get tired of it because every Sunday or Saturday, they're going to some award show. Now, after we get done with the Golden Globes, we'll have a little break, but they'll be doing like roasts or tributes to various people. They just had a Golden Globe tribute to Helen Mirren and Sarah Jessica Parker. And they do that on a stray night. They call it Golden Eve. And the Oscars do that too, where they have their, honorary awards. And the Grammys do it when they have their Music Cares Awards. So there's a whole bunch of those things that get these people out. And they hate going all the time because they see the same people all the time. They eat the same or don't eat the same thing. And it's, I would get tired of it. I think, for us, it'd be great. It'd be fun to go. It'd be fun to see all that. But who knows? You know what I mean?
Right. I know it is kind of funny, like the truest of first world problems, like, I have to go to another party. But I mean, we all can be homebodies. I mean, it's nice to stay home.
They won't show until the Oscars. If they get nominated for an Oscar, they'll show. Because that's a big enough deal for them. But they're not going to go to some of these other, like the Palm Springs Festival of Arts, or I don't know what they call it. But it's there's something where they announce the winners before they even come to the thing. And they'll go because they think that means that they're in the discussion and people will start voting for them or nominating them for other awards. So I think it'd be fun just to go to see who I would see there.
Yeah, to be the fly on the wall who maybe had a few too many cocktails, right?
Get the camera. We're ready to shoot this, right? It's a better video than you could get anywhere else. And, what's funny is that they're so kind of guarded when they're out in public and don't want to be seen or don't want to have a picture taken. And then they're in their own element with their other people. And it's free hunting for anybody.
So, I brought up the network aspect of this, But right now, network TV, it's a struggle to get nominated. There's just not a whole lot. Like, you know, obviously you'll see things, big productions like The American Revolution will presumably clean up come Emmy time or something for documentaries. Right. But that's kind of an unusual thing right now, because you're seeing, you know, HBO and Netflix and these other streaming platforms are really just crushing it. Apple TV Plus is another, Paramount. But, you know, Abbott Elementary is one that still is at the top of its game and coming from a traditional network.
Yeah, well, and there are still good shows on network television. Don't cut that short. But either they've been rewarded before and people are tired of having them, or they're those kind of franchise shows that you go, well, no, this isn't special enough. You know, where it's three CSIs or three Chicago whatevers or three Law and Orders, that's not enough to attract attention. You have to have something fresh and new, and then they could get in there. But it's difficult. And then ones like Fox don't even program series that much anymore. They're picking up series from Canada and running them as if they're fresh from them. So,
right. I wonder how much also, you know, you remember the old days, which really weren't that many years ago, but just going back 10 years ago, 15 years ago, most sitcoms, you know, they were about 22 minutes, right? With plus commercials, and there would be 20 to 25 episodes a year. And the dramas, which would be about 44, 45 minutes plus commercials, again, you're doing, you know, between 20 and 25 episodes a year. But since they relaxed the rules on, you know, what makes a series, because what do you have to do? Like 8 episodes is the minimum, 10, something like that?
And some have been nominated, like with 2 episodes that are out there.
Right. So and it's just...
And that screws up the timeline of when they're eligible. So, yeah.
But it's you know, I wonder... And this is what hurts network TV is not that networks have been cheap or anything like that, but network TV has always been reliant more on, you know, whether it's media deals, advertising. If the advertising is there, they'll spend, you know, the ratings have to be there and they'll spend. But if you're an HBO or a Netflix and you're not necessarily sharing all of your audience data out there, you can just say like, hey, you know what? I'm going to do 8 episodes for a season of like a Game of Thrones or something like that. And we're going to put money behind it, you know, like theatrical kind of money behind it and do something. And if you're just a network TV, not that they're not billion-dollar corporations, but it's coming from a different business model. And like, you know, it's tough to compete with that too.
Well, and they've got to crank out 20 some episodes of a show for a network series,
right,
as opposed to, you know, a handful for another one. Never mind that nobody watches it. They make it seem special because it's only 8 episodes.
Right. And exactly.
FX does this a lot too. They'll have a short order for a series. I still look back at Shogun and I think, that was a limited series. And then when it got successful, they said, we're going to do a second season of this.
Mm-hmm.
And then they could get in that category that wasn't that competitive for best drama series. And they won.
Right.
But I really think if you pushed them against the wall and said, are you sure you're doing a second season? It was a good way of letting people know, oh, we've got to nominate this. Because I think in limited series, it might not have won.
Yeah, right. Because it was a strong year for limited series. So
yeah, and
you're pushing up against a lot.
That's where you're seeing big money spent. That's where you're getting the big name actors, because they don't have to commit to 10 years, 7 years, 5 years, whatever it is. And I think that's what the future could be, is limited series could be where we find most of our big things,
right?
You know, and I'm actually watching one called The Beauty right now, which is about very similar to The Substance. where it's emphasizing the need to look younger, to look better, to be good looking, and what the price you pay for this. And it's fascinating, mm-hmm. but it looks like it's been done.
Right. Well, and you know, the other thing, not just the limited series, but the anthology series, which it accomplishes some of the same things as the limited, where it gives actors an opportunity to just kind of swoop in and do 8 or 10 episodes, but you can maintain a program year after year by just turning over the cast. You look at like Fargo,
right?
You look at True Detective, you look at The White Lotus. These are series where I can almost count on them coming back every year, every couple of years. So as a fan, you keep bringing me back to the same show, but you just turn over like either the entire cast or most of the cast and tell a completely different story, but it's still part of the same series. So you have that built-in audience. And so on one hand, you have that audience, but on the other hand, you don't have to commit as an actor to doing right. 3, 4, 5, 10 years, whatever it is.
You know, I know you're too young, but when I was a kid, they had things like the Kraft Music Hall, which would be musical kind of specials with big name performers. And they wouldn't do, but they do one a year. And then they'd have a bunch of these. So you might have, you know, Billie Eilish might be one week and the next week might be Adele. The week after that might, you know, so there was an umbrella title that allowed those to all come in, but you didn't have to commit to anything. Same way with the GE Playhouse, which would, they would do Broadway shows. And then we had, Night Gallery was one that, Rod Serling was pushing. So there were ones like that where you could just drop in and leave. Hallmark Hall of Fame was real big. And they would do things you wouldn't normally see, but they would also attract actors who normally wouldn't want to do television. You know, that so many years they would say TV is beneath us. And so they wouldn't do anything. But if it had this kind of special quality to it, all right, well, we'll do that. One is good. I can do that.
Interesting.
Yeah, what I really miss is that growing up when I was able to see Broadway plays on television and you go, oh my God, I would love to go to Broadway and see this in person. But since I can't, I can watch it on TV and enjoy it. And I wish they'd do that more often. I wish that Broadway producers, after they've had the run, do one more where they tape it and they can hold that sucker for a couple weeks, a couple months, a couple years, and then run it. And then people get a chance to see those things because they don't normally, and they could make more money off it too.
Well, so you had an interview.
Yeah. I talked with Chris Perfetti from Abbott Elementary. He plays Jacob, you know, kind of the flighty one, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked point blank about what is it like being at those award shows where you guys are the only ones from a network show kind of holding the banner. Is it difficult? What's it like? Here, this is the interview, if you care to hear, and he talks about that. I think it's kind of interesting. Sure, it's Bruce Miller. It's the Sioux City Journal. Chris, how do you guys handle the high level of performers? I mean, you're all heavy hitters. Is that competitive? What is it like?
It's very competitive. It's ruthless. We're not on speaking terms right now. It's cutthroat. Yeah. No, it's thrilling. I mean, I feel like they up my game every day. They're all so funny, and they're for some crazy reason unbelievably generous and kind as well. And so I'm just trying to get on their level. It's so much fun.
Which partnership works best for you? Which one do you like being with the most?
Oh, it's an impossible question, Bruce, but I really like them all. I think Quinta wrote very specific people. She wrote kind of a seven-headed monster. And so any combination of them, you know, because they are so specific, works for me. You know, right now, I guess it's sort of seasonal. You know, we're capturing a moment right now between Jacob and Ava. And I think those characters have, you know, a lot of potential to really set each other off and show up for each other. It's comedy gold, I think, Jacob and Ava. And so I'm having a lot of fun doing that, but it's hard.
Is Jacob like you, or is Jacob like some teacher you knew, or where does he fit in?
I honestly, as the years go on, sort of the line between Jacob and Chris is getting ever blurrier. And I think that's probably because I divulge too much about my real life to Quinta, who's now one of my great friends and our writers. But I don't know. I think it's also just the being able to be with a character for a very long time, which I never have, certainly in this way. It's just, I just feel like, yeah, I'm taking on some of him and he's taking on some of me. But no, he's not really based on anybody in my real life that I know. I think I didn't see anything interesting about trying to study a teacher. I thought what Quinta wrote was very clear to me. I knew who those people were, who are constantly sort of putting their foot in their mouth and who are a social puppy dog and overeager, and he really feels like a Shakespearean clown to me. And so it just felt like it was all there for me on the page.
Could you be a teacher? Do you think you'd be a good teacher?
I think I could. I think I enjoy that. I think I think teachers would probably say that everybody thinks they could be a teacher, but they actually, you know, when it comes time to do it, they maybe would disabuse themselves of that notion.
Okay, having done Twinless and then doing this, do you have ambitions that I want to also direct, I also want to produce, I also want to write, or is it like, no, I'm fine where I am, thanks?
I think I thought that I would work primarily as an actor who would occasionally direct as well. And I think the last couple years have taught me that the more I can sit with something in that uncomfortable, unfinished phase, which actors don't have to do a lot, the better I am. I think this job has definitely taught me that, because every episode we're sort of making from scratch and on the fly. And so I definitely want, you know, I have stories I need to tell, and we'll see. I don't know. Directing TV doesn't seem like my story, but anything's possible.
You know, I always feel sorry for you people on Abbott Elementary, because you have to hold the broadcast banner in all of these award shows. It's always just every streaming service and then one show. How does that feel from your end?
It's tough. It's a tough, the crown is heavy. It's amazing. It's so not lost on me, as much as I try and, you know, guard myself against all of that stuff. Certainly being the only network show, as you said, is humbling. We work so hard and so quickly on the show, and these award shows always kind of land smack in the middle of our production schedule. And so any opportunity to like pop out and just take it all in and put everything into perspective and to be honored in that way, it's fabulous. It's very cool, and I'm grateful for it.
I'm pulling for you, so be there. Thanks so much.
Great to be with you.
All right, Bruce, thank you for that interview. Now, our listeners are aware that, you know, you stepped away from your longtime career as an editor. You know, you're still writing. I mean, you're not done. You're not retired, but you know, you've stepped away from your full-time career.
You never retire, and I think I'm busier than I ever thought I was. But one of the things I had to do was move some of the boxes that I had at the office out of the office so somebody else could have the office. And in there, I ran across these binders. And I used to be very organized. You would be very proud of me if you saw the organization of this. But it was negatives. And back then, we had black and white negatives. That's all we shot was black and white film.
Okay.
And I have all of the interviews that I had done in the late 70s and early 80s in these binders. And it's like a gold mine. I'm pulling, I pull a strip out and look it up at the light so I can kind of see who it is. And then I realize, oh my God, that's so-and-so that I interviewed back in 1985.
Wow.
And so I ordered the equipment that I can actually look at these and see what's there. But I hit on the last day of MASH. I was there for the final shooting of MASH, and I have a lot of pictures from that where they're hugging and kissing and around the set. You get to see what the set looks like. I thought it was kind of fun. And
wow.
Then big stars when they would do one shots at the thing. I was on the set of The Thornbirds, and you'll see Rachel Ward and Richard Chamberlain and what that place looked like. It was the most incredible set ever, Dragita. But I have things like that that are in there. And I think if I pick out a few of them, people are going to go, wow, that's interesting. For me, it's proof that I actually did these things. So, you know, I'm not lying. I'm not making this up. But they've held up quite well, considering they've been in a box for all these years. And
sure.
I just never looked at them. Wow.
What's the most interesting or fascinating thing you found that maybe you forgot about?
Well, that MASH bunch, that was, I remember that day like it was yesterday. It was incredible. And talking with the cast, because they were just mingling and they were shooting one final scene, and it was not the final episode. The final episode
right.
was a movie, but
yep.
they were burying a time capsule and they made mistakes while they were shooting the thing. And then they finally got it done and they said, that's a wrap. That's the end of MASH. Thank you and goodbye. And they all started hugging and kissing, and you could talk to any of them as long as you wanted and look at the set and check everything out. It was much different then. Now, we were at this set of Friends when they were like winding things up, and my God, it was like armed guards keeping you away from anybody. And so it was a different atmosphere back then. And, you know, going and visiting the homes of some of the celebrities. And I think that's in there as well. And
wow.
So looking at it, it's great reminders of what went on. I do know I have colored photographs somewhere because the network used to shoot those and they would hand them to you. And just
yeah.
say, here's some pictures we took of you. And the black and white ones, I had my run of happy and not so happy people. It was funny. Michael Reagan died just recently, and they made a big point of saying, do not ask about Ronald Reagan when you talk to Jane Wyman. Jane Wyman was in Falcon Crest, if that name rings a bell.
Sure.
And I thought, well, I, you know, come on, don't drop a bait like that to me and tell me I can't do it. So I said, well, you know, here's what I'll do. I'll ask her about Michael Reagan, because Michael had just been in Sioux City and I
yeah.
spent a night visiting with him. And I said, well, I just happened to, I saw your son this last week. I said, he was so fun. And she said, oh, he's nothing. She said, you got Merm. Merm is a good one. That's Marine Reagan. She said, she's lots of fun. And that got me open and into talking about it. But, I found that was kind of strange. And he wasn't a very nice guy, a very nice guy, and very willing to talk to people in Iowa, because he was, you know, thumping for his dad. But
sure.
that was interesting. And then one time I had Anne Margaret. Come on, Anne Margaret.
Right.
Here she is, and it's Anne Margaret sitting across the table from you. And I pull up my camera to take a picture of her. And suddenly I feel this like the wrath of Khan on my arm. And it's her husband, Roger Smith, who everybody said was so sickly that he could barely be there, but he was coming anyway. He had the Vulcan pinch on me, and it was the worst. He said, you take one picture, she walks. And I said, oh, fine. I won't take any pictures, because I was told I could.
Mm-hmm.
But no, he says, you can't, because they wanted to control all the photographs.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'm sure in that process, there are some pictures that I took before I got stopped. So I'm trying to look to see if I have something like that in the mix of things. I posted a picture of Tom Cruise, and he looks so kiddish.
I know.
He looks like
I
he's
know.
12.
Yeah.
And I had Christopher Reeve in there, too. And that was when he was doing It was some movie after Superman, but before his accident. And he looks like a million bucks. I mean, this is, I have Tom Cruise as a young kid. I mean, not Tom Cruise, Tom Hanks as a young kid. And Tom Hanks as a kid, you go, I don't know him like that. But this was around the time of Bosom Buddies. And just real fun. And Macaulay Culkin when he was in Home Alone. So all these are in these negatives somewhere. But until I get the equipment to actually look at them, I'm not holding each one up to the light and seeing, I think that's so-and-so.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we'll see what we get from it. It could be something good. And if you watch social media, or I'll let you know when I'm going to post something that's interesting, you'll get a chance to look at that stuff.
Yeah. Could you see yourself doing like a photo book or some sort of retrospective? Because this could be fun to do.
People always ask, are you going to write a book? Well, no, because I don't know who would read it, to be honest with you. But when I see these pictures, these are, there's not that element where you're kind of putting your own two cents in. It's it's there. It's the picture. I'm with what you wait. So it could be something if anybody would be interested in it. I don't know that anybody would want to look at them. Yeah. So we'll see if they do well on social media and then go from there.
I think it would be fascinating, to be honest with you. I think it's the type of thing where, you know, even if you did a book where it was just the photos with maybe a short, like a retrospective of like, you know, how you interacted, where did the photo come from, you know, what it was like. And because I think some of these people who, because you said like Tom Cruise referred to you as Mr. Miller, right?
Yeah.
And this is a guy that jumped on a couch on TV.
How old am I, you know?
Right.
At the time, I'm sure we were very much close in age. And
right.
Now,
I mean, yeah, the age distance between you and him isn't that great. You're a couple years older than him, but you know, it's kind of funny to think about.
Yeah, and it's the stuff that you remember. When I look at these pictures, I can recall things like crazy. It jogs the memory. And then I can go back and look at newspapers.com, which, by the way, if you folks haven't done that, go to newspapers.com. You can find more stuff. And if I remember the right date and where it was, I can find the story and I could match it all up. You know, so it's not like I'm lying. This is not my nursing home story, but it is something that I think people would like to see, only because I covered the business for so many years. And when you're talking to Lucy and you're talking to Mary Tyler Moore, all those ones we used to watch on a Saturday night where you wouldn't leave your house on Saturday night because you had All in the Family, MASH, Mary Tyler Moore, Bob Newhart show, Carol Burnett show. And you just sat and you were there, you were hooked. And then as soon as that was over, you had a half hour break and then Saturday Night Live started. And in there are Saturday Night Live photos too, where I was on the set of Saturday Night Live. And so I think there's something there, but I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I know my dad years ago bought some sort of scanning device where he was trying to take old slides and convert them into digital photos. And it's so time consuming, but at the same time, when you unearth things, it can be so rewarding also, because it just starts jogging the memories of like, oh yes, you know, that's where I was.
I was Will the family slides and projector and screen. And once every like 5 or 10 years, my sister will say, let's pull out the slides and look at them. And it's like, oh, do I want to mess with that? No.
Right. No. No,
so
but
this could be like the slides where they'll go back in that box where they came from and I'll never see them again. But I do think there is value for some people because of the times that we were in, and fascinating kind of stories that might go with it.
Yeah. That's interesting. All right. Well, I'm intrigued and I'm curious to see what comes out of this project.
Terry, it could be our first streamed and screened, volume
one
of
volume one
the print accompaniment of this.
There you go. It'll be ready for Christmas next year. Yeah. Start ordering now.
2030.
All right. Well, on that note, thank you for listening and tune in again next week for another episode of Streamed and Screened.